our data center is in chaos.
No.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 117. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how's it going, buddy?
Feeling relaxed, feeling calm.
Oh,
trying
yeah?
to doing my Tai Chi, parting the horse's mane, repulse the monkey. I'm just trying to reach my moment of zen and happiness and be at peace.
You're repulsing the monkey. Okay. All right.
That's a Tai Chi form.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Well, John, it's fire, flood, and blood time, my friend.
Fire, flood, blood! You had to ruin my zen moment. You had to.
Yeah, there's no time for relaxation, man. This is anxiety, baby. These are war stories from real data center administrators who have, lived to tell the tale. But, so we did this once before. We had a whole group of folks that we captured little, war stories of the data center, whether it's fire, flood, blood, you name it, resume generating events, if you will. And they lived to tell about it. So we had a lot of good feedback from the first episode. So we went ahead and captured some more, and we will continue to capture these from time to time. So if you ever see us, whether it's at VMworld or a VMUG or whatever, be sure to grab us and share your story with us. Heck, if we're not going to see you somewhere, just shoot us a DM and we'll grab it on Zoom. But anyway, these are great stories. We love to capture when we're on the road. We've got a handful of them this week. Some that we captured from the last time we were with the folks from Veeam. I just captured some folks at a VMUG in Charlotte. And it's fire, flood, and blood, baby.
Hey, you've got fire, you've got ice in your data center. We got more gore in this data center than a Game of Thrones episode.
Don't get me started. I didn't watch the entire season of Game of Thrones yet. I decided to wait because I get too
It angry. Was fine. Everyone's all uppity. It was good. I liked it.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, I'll take your word for it. I'm going to binge watch it after. Now that it's all done, I'll binge watch it, and then I'll let you know how it goes. But until then, it's Fire, Flood, and Blood. All right, joining us now for Fire, Flood, and Blood is VMware's own Kevin T-Bear. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing well. So you're doing VMware Cloud Foundation these days, right?
That is correct. VMware Cloud Foundation and VMware Validated Design for Tech Marketing.
Beautiful. Yeah. And we're going to have you on soon. I want to talk more about VMware Cloud Foundation. But today, I really want to hear the rest of this story that you started telling me concerning your fire, flood, and blood story. So take it away.
Absolutely. So it was maybe about 7 years ago or so, and I was working in a managed service provider. And basically, I was in charge of data center design, et cetera. So we had 13 managed services that I brought on, and one of those services was Hosted Exchange.
Yeah.
A great way for small businesses to, quickly, realize some value, but also for us to make some money on the side.
Yeah, they don't have to manage it. It's a service. It's always there. It's always available.
And it was before O365, et cetera. So we spin this up. We have around 2,500 users on it, and we had two data centers, and they were redundant to one another, and of course, database availability groups. And
so we already had DAG. So this is newer. Okay, good.
It was like
okay.
2007, right?
Got it.
So we had it all spun up and tested failover several times, and all of a sudden, we're moving our data center from one location to another, and we go ahead and shut it down, and we start failing everything over, and we're moving it. Actually, it was moving from Milwaukee to Chicago. So we are in Milwaukee, we shut everything down, we pack it up in the car, hour into the trip to Chicago to the new data center, and the phone rings, and they're like, hey, Hosted Exchange is down. And I'm like, Hosted Exchange isn't down? Like, we tested this. We made sure that mailboxes were up, before we left.
Yeah.
And, another phone call comes in, hey, Hosted Exchange is down. And I was like, well, this can't be. So we pull the car over, get out our laptops, and we're like, Hosted Exchange is down. So immediately, like, gas pedaled to the floor, moved to the new data center, and within, I think we were about an hour from this, hour from the facility, within basically about 2 hours, we had rack, stack, cable, powered everything up, and brought Exchange back online within, you know, 3 hours of taking it down. And this is like full rack and stack and turning up the circuit and making sure things work. And
not exactly what I would call a failover design.
No. And what had happened is that the database availability group basically hadn't completed its failover before everything shut down, even though it reported back that it was healthy. So we're do not recommend.
That's a nightmare. Yeah. So the lesson learned here is to let your failovers finish, right?
The lesson learned here is try once, try twice, and shut everything down, and then try again, and then move the equipment.
Very nice. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Also joining us on Fire, Flood, and Blood is James
Fire,
and
Flood,
Craig.
Blood.
We got to get a soundbite for that, John.
Yeah, we do.
James, Craig, do you guys work together or?
No.
Okay.
James and I are leaders for the Veeam User Group UK.
Nice.
But we knew each other before then just through VMware user groups.
Yeah, through VMware and through Veeam. We both work in the service provider industry. So it's a smallish community in the UK. Yeah. So tend to find.
But I'm sure at that level, there's some good stories.
Certainly
some
are.
Keep them clean. We'll keep them clean.
Yeah, you can change the names to protect the innocent, but. Yeah.
There are no innocent.
Yeah. Alive.
All right, let's hear it.
I'm trying to think of the worst. Probably data loss event we had was a on-prem customer that was replicating to us using a semi-storage aware technology.
Okay.
Semi-storage. So
was that the brand name?
Yeah, it should be. I don't want to name names, but they were replicating into us and they were decommissioning their data center and we were taking over all of their infrastructure. However, unbeknown to us, they decommissioned half of that technology while the production VMs were still running on it and it didn't alert and didn't send us a lot of data that it should be.
Ouch.
We only found out when we failed over to it, and we had enough because this was a couple of weeks to us actually cutting over that the test that they ran when they failed over was enough to think that they had everything they needed. But large amounts of SQL databases were garbage if you tried to do reporting of them over a month in age, basically.
Wow.
So the day-to-day stuff ran fine. They did their test.
They did a basic smoke test, yeah, but they didn't actually...
They signed off the failover, we committed it, and it was Monday morning. About 5 days later, they go, yeah, there's something's not right here. And that started a six-week period of gluing SQL databases back together.
So did it... Was this like silent data corruption? Did SQL just fail to start, or did you actually find invalid records?
SQL was quite happily running. All the day-to-day transactions post-cutover worked fine. But if you reported the actual LDF and MDF files were...
So that's silent data corruption.
Yeah,
but that's some terrifying stuff right there.
DBCC was not happy, but
How do you fix that though?
So we had backups using Veeam from prior to cutover. However, the customer
had accepted transactions on the new database.
Yep, absolutely.
Split brains.
It's worse than that. So they had 5 days worth of transactions post cutover with us, which we had to keep hold of. They had also used Veeams to truncate the logs within SQL, and then they were under the impression that they had transaction logs done with SQL all throughout their working day prior to the cutover. But the way that they did, effectively, the Veeam backup broke that chain, so they couldn't use it.
Yeah, if you stagger multiple things that are truncating logs,
exactly,
you got to use one product.
Yeah, it's messy.
Pick one to do the truncate of the logs, and they hadn't.
Yeah, and that's something you got to make sure your DBAs aren't doing their own little weird thing in the corner, and then your grown-up backupmens are doing something else.
Yeah, so we basically had kind of three databases that we needed to merge back into one.
Was there data loss? Did you have to cut your losses and say, we can only do X because of the mix?
The SQL guys that work in my company are actually pretty good, and they got down to maybe a couple of hundred records missing.
Wow.
Good DBAs are worth their weight in whiskey.
Yeah, I mean, it took them a long time, don't get me wrong, but they put it back together in a way that I'd never be able to do.
I don't have anything as bad as that. Mm-hmm. It's mainly that's deep stuff.
Yeah.
So two stories. We have the first one, working on a Saturday, backup fails, take backup, can you please reboot the tape device? It's the large silver box on top of the...
Wait, tape always works.
Tape's all, yeah, it does, doesn't it? So phoned up out of our support, 24 hours. Intelligent, air quotes on radio don't really work.
Yeah.
Intelligent hands. It's the large silver box on top of the two small silver boxes. Watching the monitoring meter on the tape drive coming back up. Host number one goes offline. Uh-oh. Excuse me, I think you've powered off the wrong server. It's a large silver box. Okay, I'll go back and power it off. Host number two goes offline.
Ouch.
I could see where that was going.
Yes. So that was the fun one. Or the other one was we had some secure cabinets for a previous project. The power into the secure cabinets wasn't due until Tuesday. So this was Friday. We decided as a temporary measure to run power out through the secure cabinet, keeping the door open, just a temporary measure. Our then at the time head of networks wasn't too keen on the door, closing the door. And we kept saying, please don't touch the door, please don't touch the door. Loud bang, large flash from the server room. System started going offline on our monitoring. He walks out the storage room with a charred face and the wispy snow, for the comedic effect.
Oh, wow.
What did you do? I did nothing. He cleanly sliced through the mains into the cabinet and everything was offline.
Of course.
It was pretty spectacular. The flash and the bang and the puff of smoke was very good.
That's an easy lesson learned. Never run cables on an open door. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've got another power-related one, actually, which I don't think we lost any data, actually. It was a clustered mail archiving solution, so hardware appliances. And
it's an appliance. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
It's a magic appliance box.
So the issue I had is it was at the top of the rack, and for whatever reason, it crashed, and we couldn't get it to it remotely. And unfortunately, although it's got USB devices on it, apparently they don't work. You had to use PS2, keyboard and mouse. So I'm on the top of a ladder trying to plug these in. And as I'm doing that, the device slides forward maybe 3 or 4 mil because it wasn't racked properly.
Yeah, it wasn't locked.
Oh, secure. Yeah. was it actually racked or was it just sitting on another server? Those are my favorite.
It was actually racked. It wasn't kind of clipped into the rack, so it slid on its rail. But it slid out just enough to pull it out of the mains cable, which then started arcing and then went pop. So we lost power on the whole rail for that rack, or one of the rails. All the other systems kept up fine. Power supply and the board in that device died.
Oh my goodness.
At least you got lucky, though, because my favorite is when you blow your A or your B rail out, and then you discover you were running over 40% on both rails.
Exactly.
And then it fails over, and then you just blast the other rail. And then maybe that goes and takes out another box, and you just hear...
Yeah, you just get this cascade failure.
To the data center.
Yeah. No, that didn't happen. But you know when you hear this kind of arcing and then a pop, and then you hear the fans of every other device just go...
Yeah, when you go down to one power supply, they all spin apart.
That's when the blood pressure starts to rise.
And then about 30 seconds later, my mobile's going off. Everyone in the... what have you done?
Yeah, well, that's still better than the data center that no one monitors. And you're like, it's the island of misfit toys. There's stuff blinking everywhere. Like,
and that's why we had a clustered solution across multiple data centers. So the service stayed up, and no.
At least you didn't fall off. I thought you were gonna fall off the ladder and like get hit in the face.
That's what I was waiting for.
Server was gonna slide and take you out. Like this is like this like slow motion. Final Destination Data Center Edition or something is what this was building up to.
That would make
John, that's another episode.
Final Destination Data Center Edition.
Fantastic obituary. Excellent. By one new server.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Chad Sack. It's Chad. Welcome back.
Pete, it's great to be here, bud.
Yeah, man. So something tells me that you've got more than one of these Fire, Flood, and Bloods, but let's hear one of your bests.
Okay, so they are legion. Been around our industry for a while, you have many stories. This one was literally 2 weeks ago.
So oh my God.
Hot off the presses.
Nice.
Huge Fortune 10 customer, a total of 18 hours of 9,000 devs out of business. So huge outage.
Wow.
And in the end, again, I'm keeping the customer name out to save the innocent.
Protect the innocent. Yeah.
But basically, when you root cause the whole thing, it was caused by a bad NIC driver. So it was this whole cascading fault where the bad NIC driver was causing the vSphere ESX host to bounce. As the host bounced, VMHA and the SDS layer would do their thing, but the host would reboot and then another host would bounce. So you basically had an unstable vSphere cluster.
Oh, wow.
Underneath a PCF PaaS and PKS footprint. So on top you had the construct of multiple AZs that were constructed, mm-hmm. right? So in theory, if done properly, you know, the workloads would automatically fail over between availability zones, even if you had a completely flaky underlying IaaS layer.
Okay.
Right? However, the app was not architected right, which meant that the app wasn't doing load balancing across the AZs. It was all, you know, it had no HA across the availability zones.
Oh, no.
And then the last thing was it took the collective us, the combined Dell Tech family of companies, an extra 9 hours out of the full-blown outage to properly triage because it came in as a Sev3 case because they were developers. It was non-prod, right? But of course, that for them, that is prod. Like, dev is prod.
That's their money.
That's what these 9,000 developers are writing code. If they can't write code, they're non-productive for, you know, basically a day and a half.
Yeah.
And so, moral of the story, number one, little things can add up.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Number two, you need to think about resilience at every layer. So here, realistically, it was a bug at the ESX layer with the particular NIC driver.
Sure.
HA and the SDS layer performed as expected, but they were thrashing because the hosts were going up and down, left and right. But then the AZs even acted as expected, but the app wasn't designed properly to have multi-AZ and take advantage of it, right? And then the last, so takeaway one, small things add up. So knee bone connected to thigh bone. I'm sure that many listeners have seen those situations,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So think about, you know, resilience at every layer of the stack, all the way up, you know, above the infra layers. And then the other one was how a case gets categorized makes a big difference. I'm not saying everybody raise your cases as Sev1s, listeners. But, you know, if it is a Sev1, you know, make sure that whatever vendor you're working with knows that it's a Sev1 case.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole different conversation because it really is. Containers in general is redefining this entire space. Now, this is, they may be developers, but that doesn't mean that they're not generating income.
I've got another one where basically it was a customer running Kubernetes on top of vSphere, on top of HCI. And again, this is a Fortune, not 10, but Fortune 100 customer. And their containers were a trading app, and the trading app was connected to a mainframe, but the containers were doing some of the ephemeral work. And, you know, again, it's containers and cloud native can be as mission critical as your old school mainframe and Oracle database.
I love it. The visual of a container in leading the charge of an AS400 is pretty, it's pretty awesome, yep. Man. We've come full circle almost. I love it.
Totally.
Thanks, Chad.
My pleasure.
All right, joining us now, vSAN SE, Darren Zook. Darren, what's up, man?
Not much. How are you?
Doing well. Here at the vMug, we're talking vSAN, we're talking availability, all kinds of stuff. And
lots of good stuff.
Yeah, we got a Fire, Flood, and Blood episode. So why don't you share us your Fire, Flood, and Blood story that you were telling me about?
Yeah, this goes back quite a few years, but was asked in a data center, with a developer was having some issues with a Sunbox and said, hey, I think I've got a bad memory module. Can you go into the data center and reseat it for me?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure. I don't have a whole lot of experience with, you know, Sunboxes at all, but yeah, it's hardware. I'll go in and do it.
What could go wrong?
So I go in and I have the thing out of the rack and I'm in there reseating this memory module when I hear click.
That's not a good sound.
It's not a good sound, especially standing in the data center with, you know, a couple hundred servers.
Yeah.
Turns out that our friends at Iron Mountain had thought that the giant red button next to the data center door was the door opener button, when in fact it was the EPO button. So needless to say, it didn't end well. Yeah. We ended up down for quite a few hours, and then when they finally did find, you know, where to get the power restored, they restore the power, and then you start running around powering off servers because not everything can come up at once.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so we're holding in power buttons, getting all these servers to shut down, you know, from hard shutdown. And finally, we're able to get everything back online and, you know, bring things up one by one in the right order, starting with our domain controllers, working our way back. So all said and done, I mean, it was no harm, no foul. There was definitely some money lost that day, but, you know, it was one of those situations I don't care to relive for sure.
Yeah. What would be the lesson learned from that other than relocate an EPO button? Because those things are always in the wrong place.
They're always in the wrong spot and they're always too big. I mean, this thing was 3 inches around and there was nothing covering it. Yeah. So the very first thing they did was they went and had some covers manufactured and they put covers over the buttons so that you actually had to tear away the cover yeah. in order to get to the button.
Yeah, this is not an easy button.
This is not an easy button, and I don't recommend pushing it.
Nice. Thanks, Darren.
You betcha.
All right, John, joining us on this episode of Fire, Flood, and Blood is Mr. Ken Nabone. Ken, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
So we're talking anything, you know, disaster related, something that at least has some sort of lesson learned. So I hear you have a good story for us.
I don't know about good, but I have a story.
There we go.
So I was working for a financial services company a few years ago, not particularly big. I had a small cluster, 4 hosts. I got to the point where it wasn't really N plus 1 anymore. It was like N plus 0.8 or so in terms of resource consumption. I didn't have the budget to expand it, but I managed to, you know, scrape enough money together to add enough RAM to keep me going. And financial services is great because we get a lot of holidays. When the markets are closed, we were closed.
Yeah.
One day in particular is Good Friday, the Friday before Easter. That's when I chose to do it. I went in on a Friday afternoon with all my RAM sticks, you know, carefully putting hosts in maintenance mode one by one, pulling them out, putting RAM in, turning them back on, taking them out of maintenance mode, do the next one. Got to my last host and put in maintenance mode, powered it off, was all ready. I had everything nicely labeled. I even pushed the little button that the front of the server has to flash so that when you come around to the back of the rack, you know which one
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, even the UID indicator or whatever.
Exactly. And I pulled the power cords of the server above it by mistake. So my 4-node cluster went down to 2 all of a sudden. It was supposed to be at 3. Basically, you know, I did not have enough resources for HA to reboot all the VMs.
Oh, no.
Including the vCenter server that was on the host that I pulled. So I got into a situation where I couldn't get VMs to boot up, vCenter in particular. And when I did, somehow it was corrupted, wouldn't boot. It was in Windows vCenter at the time.
Oh, back
in
those days. Yeah.
I couldn't get it going.
Big fan of the VCSA, are you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody is now, right?
Oh, yeah.
SQL Express could do some interesting things if it was unexpectedly shut down.
Even better, I had basic support. And it was like 4:50 on a Friday afternoon.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, call us on Monday, please.
I called VMware support basically to say, here's the situation. Can I pay you extra and get support this weekend if I need it? They said yes. I said, I'm going to do what I can, try to get it back up on my own, but keep the ticket open and I'll keep you appraised. Fortunately, I had Veeam. I managed to, you know, just restore from a recent backup. It took a while, but I got back in and then slowly but surely, you know, gave my cluster the TLC it needed. And by the time Easter morning rolled around, I could breathe a little easier and VPN in and mostly enjoy the family time. But it took basically most of my 3-day weekend, my 2-hour, you know, Friday afternoon project.
Yeah, everybody says backups are boring, but restores are not so boring. They're kind of scary.
Well, it's
Will this work?
That I was going to say, it sounds like you did one of my favorite things that way too many people forget, which is remember to back up your management infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's.
So, yeah, what did you take away from that? What was the thing you said, okay, I'm redesigning, I'm rethinking the way I do IT?
I'm much better about labeling my cables now.
Yeah.
Even though they had labels, they were not necessarily as descriptive as they were after the fact. And instead of double checking, I triple check everything before I pull it, basically.
Well played. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
All right, John, joining us now on this episode of Fire, Flood, and Blood. He is a good friend of the podcast, Mr. Paul Stringfellow. You may know him from his podcast, Tech Stringy. He does tech interviews. Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm doing real good, Pete. It's great to be on the show. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
I like that. So, Paul, as you very well know, we're sitting here, a lot of war stories going on this week. People talking about not so much Fire, Flood, and Blood. Certainly that applies, but anything that's happened in the data center, you know, those oops moments, maybe resume generation events, or maybe a time in which you actually saved the day, made a mistake, and actually what the lesson learned is. So what you got for us, Paul?
Yeah, so we do a lot of work with smaller businesses. So I think, you know, we'll often hear of the big data center story. You know, it's the big disaster in a big data center.
Yep.
But for us, we tend to see a lot of smaller businesses making data center design mistakes. And in fact, they're not even data centers. A lot of
data closet, you know. Yeah. It has carpet. It has carpet. You cannot call it a data center.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's fire retardant special, you know, server grade carpet.
Yeah, it's usually when your data center is next to the PBX.
Yeah. Well, and it's exactly that. I think it's sometimes those design decisions where a smaller business just doesn't consider these, and it's not just carpet. It's next to the mop bucket. It's next to a sink. It's next to the kettle. I think a lot of the data center incidents that we've seen tend to be water related. I don't know if that's anything to do with me, but we've had instances where it's been leaky roofs, leaky pipes. one computer closet where they decided a toilet should be built above it. So
above it. Okay. No, there's always a water pipe above, and it's never the clean water. Although I have seen the other way around, where the ASA was put on top of the toilet.
Nice. Okay, I can see that. That gives that's a whole different view of firewalling.
Well, it's
well played, Paul.
Well done.
Yeah. So I think a lot of those things, and we've seen those incidents where those pipes have burst, where there's been a leak, and that leak always finds its way just above the servers. And I've noticed servers and water don't mix.
That is a true statement, Paul.
I am king of stating the obvious. It's been said.
So have you incorporated that into some of your design? Say, as a consultant, you go in and say, okay, so I've got a server I want to install. Where's the water closet? Make sure it's not there. Is that something that you've learned, is what you'd say?
Yeah, but I think the thing that we try and encourage, that even for these smaller businesses that don't necessarily see the need for, they don't see themselves as designing a data center, they don't see themselves as designing a highly available infrastructure, is that they've got to consider this stuff. You know, you've got to think about it. It needs to be somewhere that is clean and dry and accessible. Yep. And I think what we are starting to see now for a lot of organizations is the proliferation of cloud. So actually,
why is my mail server in a closet? You know, it's the cheapest, hosted email I can get is going to be in something that's a little less.
It's certainly less than if you're in a small business and you're hiring an exchange administrator, someone that needs to manage email versus just going to Office 365. That's definitely the case. Are you seeing a lot in the small business where people are offloading to the cloud to getting these applications as a service?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that completely. I think for all of the reasons you've just said, but also kind of where we started, in that the idea that if you're going to build infrastructure, you just can't make it as resilient as running it on somebody else's computer. That idea that is a data center replicated amongst multiple geolocations. You try not just a small
economy
business.
Of scale. This just doesn't
absolutely
doesn't
right. Out. Yeah, if you look at a small business, you just can't. You don't have. And by small, I'm talking maybe it's 50 servers. It might be 500 or 600 users. You just don't have the commercial ability to build across multiple locations.
So the services that are actually staying on site are stuff that really has to have a very specific case. It's the exception rather than the rule, I guess. You're working backwards from a justification of why you couldn't put it somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. It is very rare exceptions now as well. You know, we're seeing the proliferation of the move to Office 365, taking AD straight out of Azure. You know, you don't even... 3-4 years ago, you still needed some kind of domain controller locally. You don't even need that now.
You've got cache credentials you can lean on, so...
Yeah, and I think for all kinds of reasons, and a big part of that is availability. It's availability. It's the ability to always get access to that data. It's the resilience that it gives you, and it keeps it away from the dirty water pipe.
Well said, Paul.
Yeah, let's separate those services. You know, let's separate the services from the location, if possible, and from the dirty water. So.
Yes. Yeah, separate your services from the effluent, I find, is a good rule to live by.
I like it. If you don't know Paul, you need to know Paul. He's at TechStringy on Twitter, and he's got a great little podcast where he talks about IT, but he does a lot of up-leveling. He gets a lot of really, really smart business folks and excellent podcasts. So check him out at TechStringy. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Joining us now on Fire, Flood, and Blood is his Twitter handle is Working Hard in IT, but he hides his real first name pretty well there. And how do you pronounce it?
Didier,
welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast.
Hello.
So we've been talking all week about different experiences in the data center, fire, flood, and blood, whatever it is. Maybe a mistake somebody made that could have been possibly a resume-generating event. So you started to give us a bit of a story, and I wanted to make sure we capture that. So why don't you tell us that?
Well, it's a long time ago, but the day before we were to leave for a conference, it was called IT Forum back then, from Microsoft, we were leisurely sitting at our desk because, well, you don't do much before you leave for a conference.
Right. Read-only mode. Read-only mode.
Everything is working, so you just leave it alone.
Set your out of office.
Yeah, and then you got to call, you know, one of the exchange servers in one of the branch offices is not working anymore. It's down. And you're like, okay, we'll look at it. And 5 minutes later, there's like, there's another one down in another branch office. And then somebody
That's
is...
not a good thing.
Somebody is at your desk because there's another one down in another branch office. And you're like, I'm seeing a pattern here, right? So you start investigating, and sure enough, based on the AD replication, they go down one by one by one. A bit of an annoying thing to have when you're about to leave, right? So you get on a plane, actually, to the conference, and first thing you do when you land is open up the laptop, log in remotely, and you start investigating what is going on. So to make that story short, we detected that one of the administrators wanted to install some power supply management software, you know, something like
APC, PowerShoot, I think it was like the APC software.
I don't know if it was that one.
Sure, one of them. One of them.
Also on the, back then, physical domain controllers. But he was getting like an access denied error. So what do? You Google a bit. You try to figure out what's going on. And of course, if you have a security problem on a domain controller, the first thing you do is you have to reset all the security to the default settings, right? And there's a policy file for that. You can apply that. So why not? So
yeah, local GPO.
That's what they did, right? Just reset the policy, the security policy to the defaults on the domain controller. What could go wrong?
Oh my goodness, that's scary.
So as that replicated, certain things that were dependent on Active Directory didn't seem to work anymore. One of those things was, of course, Exchange.
Oh, and yeah, Exchange was all up in AD back in the day. And there was nothing like if you had a dead domain controller. I mean, it was like a multi-day surgery to remove it from the AD schema.
Yeah, but to make the story even shorter, what do? Well, you recover the domain controller from a backup, and you...
Ooh, that doesn't sound clean, though. You got to seize FISMO roles. There's like a whole...
Well, no, it's not as clean as just doing a restore. If you restore it from...
Oh, okay. Well, but this is even messier, because you have to know your AD recovery password, which people set up and never remember.
Oh, really? We do, actually. Am I special now?
We've heard you're special, but that's a different story.
that are rumors. All rumors.
So what did you do? This guy applies a default policy, which completely breaks Exchange, brings all your servers down, and then the fix to this was to
restore the FISMO holder?
Oh, no, restore the domain, basically AD, and go back to
the entire domain.
Yeah, just do that. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
a crisis averted.
There are other ways, but that was like the fastest, and we had a conference to go to.
You know, speaking of AD disasters, I've heard stories, and I'm going to have to get Brandon, who can tell the story a lot better. There's an oil gas company who they had something that destroyed their AD. I don't know if it was human error or if it was a virus or something, but they ended up with like some domain controller on an oil rig off of Tierra del Fuego or something. It was the only one that didn't get the bad replication, but they were racing against time against that copy tombstoning, and so they had to have like handoffs in airports and required like three people.
In relation to ransomware with a huge shipping company in Denmark, I think.
Yeah, no, and there were three handoffs because people didn't have the required visas.
There was one disk that they could ship, and they had to send people to hand over the disk airport to airport.
It might have been they like pulled one out of the raid set or something.
And that saved a multi-billion-dollar company and I think 20% of the world's shipping capability or something.
What's the takeaway from that?
Know your disaster recovery plan. That's one. Second, revise it once in a while. And the last lesson they learned, I think, if it was that company, is it's always a good idea to not be running 10-year-old operating systems.
Fair point.
Yeah. Let's air gap some backups.
Awesome. All right, DDA, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
See ya. You.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to all the folks that shared their fire, flood, and blood stories. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Our data center is in chaos.
I'm not even sure I believe it.
See.
Sí.
Enough of this jibber jabber.